This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Live and Learn. I'm Chua Entik. It's been known for a while now that Malaysia is the most obese country in Asia. The first instinct is to blame it on our food. But what if where we live has something to do with it too? My guest today, Professor Takumi Sugiyama, studies the relationship between design and health. His latest research found that the more time you spend driving to work, the more likely you are to be obese later on. Professor, can you elaborate on your findings?
Yes, well, what we focused in this study was a waist circumference increase. So we tracked more than 2,000 adults living in urban and suburban areas of Adelaide, Australia, and we measured their waist circumference twice over 4 years. And what we found was that waist circumference increase was not evenly distributed within the city. It was greater for people living far from the city and smaller for people living closer to the city center.
That's a very novel way of tracking a person's weight, isn't it? Instead of looking at their actual weight, you're looking at their waist circumference. Why is that?
Well, waist circumference is a good measure of abdominal fat or fat around your stomach, which is known to be related to increased risk of chronic disease, such as diabetes, heart disease, and some cancers. So, well, obviously you can measure weight, but waist circumference or abdominal fat is also an important indicator of obesity in relation to chronic disease, which are very important in our society.
Is this, you think, a more accurate way of going about trying to figure out whether someone is healthy to measure their waist circumference?
Well, there are always various measures. You know, researchers tend to use diverse, you know, different measures to understand one aspect, such as, you know, one important health issue, such as obesity. But waist circumference is often used as a very important and easily measured indicator of health risk. So that's what we used for the study.
So more than 2,000 adults in Adelaide over a period of 4 years. Were you expecting the result that you got, or were you surprised?
Well, it's not totally surprising. We half expected this type of findings to emerge from our research. We did not specifically examine sort of mechanisms or pathways or the reasons why people living far from the city center tended to experience larger increase in waist circumference. But we know from our previous study that if you live farther away from the city center, you have to rely on a car to get to anywhere. So this sedentary lifestyle is now an important behavior that has health implications. So we hypothesized that those living in the outer suburbs, because of their sedentary lifestyle, may have a greater risk of developing obesity over a number of years.
Would your next project be to investigate that hypothesis?
So, this hypothesis is in a way supported by this study. So, we didn't really look at behaviors in this study, but what we found in this study was a greater waist circumference increase in people living farther away from the city center. So, probably next study would be to look at what behaviors are more contributing to this relationship between waist circumference and where people live.
I was just thinking during that 4-year period when you are measuring the waist circumference of these adults, do they know what they are getting measured for? Like, is there a way that they could have manipulated the data? Because if they know that they're being assessed for their health, would they not try to be healthier?
Well, it's relatively long-term study. So the four-year period, perhaps it at the initial stage when they were involved at the study and they were told by researchers that, you know, we are interested in your health and we are interested in your behavior. This might have some influence at an initial stage, but we know from other research that it is very, very difficult to change people's behavior. It is very habitual. So even if they know, you know, they are a subject of health research, its influence on their behavior would have been quite limited.
Your hypothesis seems to focus on the people's commute towards work, on how much time they spend in cars instead of what they eat and whether or not they're exercising.
Yeah, well, diet is obviously an important factor when you are talking about obesity or waist circumference increase. But in this particular study, we did not measure people's diet. So we do not know how that might be a factor involved in the relationship. But it is pretty safe to assume the relationship between where people live and their commuting behavior. In the case of Adelaide, which is very car dominant city, even within Australia, cities like Sydney and Melbourne are bigger and more congested. So more people use public transport, but Adelaide is a smaller city with less public transport options. So basically, if you live farther away from city, their option is private cars. So we considered that car use for commuting, for shopping, may be a key factor contributing to this relationship between suburban location and greater waist circumference.
Suburban shopping malls, they are making us fat.
Yes, yes, they are those things in suburbs. And well, it's probably a bit of a side story, but those large box type shopping centers tend to have fast food outlets where they can consume very energy-dense, sugary drinks and food. So that may be an interesting thing to look at in future research.
How did the idea for this research come about?
Well, that's a good question. Well, there are actually existing studies on urban environment and obesity, mainly conducted in the U.S., and in the case of U.S. studies, most studies looked at a measure called County Sprawl Index. County Sprawl Index is a measure of how sprawled a particular area is using measures such as population density and the street network. And those studies, many of them reported associations between sprawled areas and resident obesity levels. But particular methodological issue with these studies using County Sprawl Index is that, you know, county is very large spatial unit. It contains one city such as San Francisco, Los Angeles, and Boston. And, you know, basically these studies assume that people's obesity level within the county is, you know, homogeneous. But in reality, within the city, there must be some gradient or differences in terms of people's obesity. And that's why we decided to look at within city scale of sort of a sprawl measure, and which can be done fairly straight in a straightforward way by measuring the distance from participants' home to a city center. So that's why we sort of decided to look at the relationship between the distance to city center and waist circumference increase in this study.
I'm speaking today to Professor Takemi Sugiyama about how cities are making us fat. We'll talk more after the break. BFM 89.9. You're listening to Live and Learn. I'm Chua Antik. My guest today is Professor Takemi Sugiyama from the Australian Catholic University. He recently published a study on how living in suburbia is making us fat. Urban sprawl is not a new phenomenon, and I think it came from the US as well. And yeah. I think almost all the studies on health and environment, it's universally bad for humans in general. And this is another piece of evidence that contributes to this idea that urban sprawl is bad. Are we still building a lot of sprawls?
Yeah. Well, it is a challenging issue for urban planners and policymakers, but many cities in Asia are experiencing population growth. Australia as well. In the case of Australia, it's immigrants from different countries, and in the case of Asian cities, it's sort of internal immigration from regional areas. And in order to accommodate this population increase, often easy thing to do is horizontal expansion, so more urban sprawled area. So I think, you know, public transportation is one solution to address this issue, but it requires substantial investment in infrastructure, and politically, it is very challenging thing to do. So facing this, you know, population growth, often easy decision they make is just expand urban growth boundary. But we know from various research, it has not just health implications, but also causes problems in sustainability and also human sort of efficiency. If people have to spend, you know, hour and a half to get to the work, then it's not really a good way for people to use time. So there are many problems associated with, you know, suburban sprawl. And I think the health planning and transport sectors have to work together to tackle this problem and try not to easily expand urban growth boundary in the face of population increase.
Can you give us some ideas on what some of these solutions look like? What can be done through this collaboration with urban planning and the transport and health sectors?
Well, that's probably a more about planning issues. But one thing U.S. American people do is health impact assessment. When a city or any sort of local government develop or produce some sort of an idea about city development, they can go through this health impact assessment process to understand what impact this particular development could have on people's health. And this is often used in a large scale project, which involves, you know, different sectors, and which could have some impact on people's health and behavior. And I hear some successful examples of application of health impact assessment in the US. So it might be something Asian cities may also adapt to provide a check kind of a, you know, process to any development proposals.
Do you think solutions like that are translatable? Because we always talk about making a city more walkable, right? But in a tropical nation like Kuala Lumpur, how are we to survive without our air conditioning?
Yeah, that's true. So regional factors needs to be considered. It is a challenge, and I don't know what really can work in cities like Kuala Lumpur and how to make cities walkable. I think that's where health researchers, planners, transportation people have to really be a bit creative, work together, learn from previous successful examples, and see what each locality can do to make active transport easier and more attractive. So this is a challenge for Kuala Lumpur city people to think about.
Do you think the findings from your study can be applied to other cities as well?
Well, looking at some Asian cities, car use is horrible in some cities. Public transport is not fully developed. So if you live very far from city center, then your only option to get to work is a car. Then, well, since we know that prolonged car use is associated with increased risk of chronic disease, so I'm fairly confident that the findings we observed in Adelaide, Australia, are to some extent applicable to Asian cities.
Are cities today still largely designed for car use?
Currently, that seems to be the major concern for urban planners and transportation policymakers in order to how to process large number of cars within the city. That seems to be a major issue. But some Asian cities started to develop public transport, and that may seems to have some impact on reducing congestion. So probably in terms of general direction, they are heading the right direction, but more and more effort to have large public transportation development would be needed in Asian cities.
Who's doing it right though? Like, are there any cities that we can look to emulate?
Well, again, I'm not a transport planner, so it is a bit kind of a difficult question for me. But I visited Bangkok last year, and even though they managed to produce a couple of public transportation, traffic jam was still very problematic. So I don't know what Singapore is doing. I don't know what Kuala Lumpur is doing. So it is, I think, the task for transportation planners and urban planners to think about for the future of Asian cities.
So your expertise, you have graduate degrees in architecture and environment behavior studies. What got you interested in this field and to link design to health?
Well, my PhD was not about health. It was more about people's perception about sustainable design. But I began to realize that how local area was designed can influence residents' health through their behaviors. And we know we are aware that the local environment, neighborhood environment, can provide people with opportunities to be active or not to be active. And the design factors can play an important role in this relationship between environment and behavior. And I think that's probably an important contribution designers can make to a society. So that's why I sort of began to shift from environment behavior studies to public health and to epidemiology.
So people's perception is, well, what we think of a city, if we think it's good, then we would feel better about it?
Yeah, I think that's an important factor we have to think about. You know, even though there are lots of nice places to walk to, if people do not know about them, their presence may not have a large impact on people's behavior. So it is rather complicated relationship between environment and people's behavior. It is somewhat mediated by what people think about their environment. So those, you know, both kind of physical environment and perceptions have to be somehow modified in order to help people to be more active.
So if someone comes to you and say they're looking for a place to stay in a city or away from a city or looking for a neighborhood, what should they be looking for?
Well, my suggestion is looking for an area where daily walking is easy. Physical activity can include exercise, sports, and, you know, daily things such as walking or cycling. But research suggests that behaviors such as walking or perhaps to some extent cycling can be easily integrated into daily life, and it is easier to maintain. But even if you may be keen to do sports and exercise at one stage, willingness or your sort of you may not be able to maintain that sort of activity. But if you live in a local area where there are more shops and services nearby or more parks nearby, then walking is part of your daily life. And this is important because it's a daily thing and it can be maintained for a long time over many years. And that will have positive impact on people's, the residents' health. So that's an important factor to consider for people who want to live in a healthy lifestyle.
What will you be working on next?
I'm interested in older adults. And for older adults, you know, they start to lose their functional mobility, muscle strength, balance, agility. But there may be some local areas that help them to maintain their mobility. And if we find what sort of areas would be good for, you know, older adults to age in their place, I think that is an important contribution to our research. So that's something I'm thinking about doing next.
Professor, thank you very much for speaking to us.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
Professor Sugiyama will be speaking at the 3rd Smart Cities Asia Conference happening at the KL Convention Centre on October 2nd and 3rd. You've been listening to BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.